Athletes must wear clothing which is clean, designed, and worn so as not to be objectionable.
Designed clothing.
Clean.
That makes it sound like...
designed and worn not to be objectionable.
Oh, I see. Because I was imagining someone who just stapled a pillowcase to a rug. There's been no design and thought gone into this. Vivian Westwood, your thoughts? Yeah, no, it's a no for me. Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. Today is episode 69 of Worst Foot Forward, the sexiest recording so far. We're all dressed in frilly outfits, carrying large whips and fluttering our come and get me eyes while straddling chairs, and we're in cages for added kinkiness. Oh, no, wait. We've confused sexy role-playing with lion taming. I see what's happened. Oh, my God, it's a lion!
But a sexy lion.
And alongside me, you've heard him just then, is my own ferocious furry little creature, my co-host, Ben Vandervelde.
Rah, rah, rah. That was a very posh lion, wasn't it? I just had a moment where it's like...
You're imagining that they're wearing furs. That's what the mane... That's not what a mane is, Ben.
No, what, wearing furs on top of their mane? That's really
that's
creepy.
That's a very posh lion.
Yeah, yes, it is. Rah, rah, Gabor. little reference that no one will get. I hate to have to start on some filth, but you did. I don't think the 69 is that sexy a position.
What number do you think is a sexier number? The 11? Lying dead straight beside each other.
That is the most Puritan position. Yeah.
The 88?
What's the 88?
Two pregnant ladies.
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I mean, I prefer to count in Roman numerals.
Oh,
so
right.
I like 11.
Two.
Yeah. Really? What do you like about
aye?
Aye. Yeah.
No. He's Jewish, so it's oi oi.
Oi oi. I enjoyed that far too much. Yeah, obviously counting in like sexual positions based on Hebrew numbers, very difficult. Trying to bend your body into an Aleph Bet.
Sexual positions in binary.
Just loads of skinny people and fat people and skinny people and fat people.
That's an orgy in one number. Yeah, the sexiest number is one in French.
Yeah, it definitely is. When I first went to Estonia, I got told to ask beautiful women something like, how do you say the number 13 in Estonian? Or how do you say I am 13 years old?
Right.
Because it's something like, the word for 13 is taste good, and the word for years old is cocks.
That's the really cultural bridge is being built between you and the Baltic states there.
It's an important to do a bit of cultural understanding.
Right. We're talking about none of this is relevant to what we're talking about today.
But it's been a while since we've gone off feast in an introduction. Let's introduce our guest, who thankfully has not run away with his tail between his legs at the sound of this filth. And considering his position that he holds, you'd have thought he would have done.
Because, positions, be very careful, Ben.
Yeah, well, no, they're mostly things like silly mid-off and long man.
Rolling and maiden over.
Yeah.
Sticky wickets.
Neither of those positions.
Cricket's very sexy.
Oh, God. Once again, bye, American listeners. So our guest this week...
Googlies.
So childish. Our guest this week has one of the finest titles of a guest we've had on the show. He is the Laws of Cricket Advisor for the MCC. A very silly job title for a not quite a silly job. He and his boss manage everything to do with the laws of cricket, from rewriting them, spotting and closing loopholes in them, providing material for umpires and players, and answering questions from all around the world. He is currently writing the definitive interpretations of the laws of cricket, several hundred pages of detailed guidance which literally dozens of people will treat with a near religious reverence and no one else will know exists. When not at Lord's, he is also a freelance sporting journalist specialising in African football and regularly reports on the championship. And most important, he has the most august position of being one of the most regular of regulars at my comedy club, good chip comedy. He is my friend and yours, Johnny Singer.
What an intro.
What an intro, pal. Which you wrote an 85% of.
Oh, right, that's fine. I thought everyone knew that, right?
Yeah, no, but that's fine. But I managed to gild the lily that you grew.
I feel like you're the Oracle at Delphi. People swarm to you for answers.
So, swarm would be a strong word. They drift in my direction, okay. Gently. It's a slightly bizarre life. People who want to know how to interpret cricket laws. And as I say, there are literally dozens of them. They come to me and I basically make it up as I go along.
How can they misinterpret them? Can you give me an example of a misinterpretation of a cricket law?
Oh, so the one we were dealing with today is whether you can have 6 overthrows. And listeners, you can. It was a long argument. Trust me. It's not worth repeating. So a lot of things like that. But then also yesterday I spent a lot of time in the nets at Lords getting a guy to get deliberately hit on the leg so we can make some LBW videos and firing a bowling machine progressively faster and faster and aiming it progressively higher and higher.
That guy really needs to talk to his agent.
I love that you've got basically a cricket laboratory where you go down to the guys in the lab and just go, okay, so let's do a theoretical situation and see what we can work out.
Yeah. No, it's pretty fun. I think I knew that it was the right job for me when about 3 weeks into the job, my boss came in and said, lads, I dropped 2 catches at the weekend. At lunchtime, we're doing fielding drills. And the rest of us went, okay, I guess we are.
That's immense. Do you have to, like, what are you wearing cricket whites and pads and a box at all times? Or are you in an MCC sort of stripy blazer and tie?
So this, you may or may not know, I'm not a full member of MCC. And that means I am not allowed to buy MCC equipment. So my first day I went to the gym and I realised...
He's just not the right sort of chap.
I realised I didn't have a towel. I wasn't allowed to borrow a towel from the shop, even if I paid for it, because I'm not allowed to own an MCC towel.
So you had to go in there towel-less?
I borrowed one from Lost Property, which is maybe the most disgusting thing that's ever happened.
Oh no. That's so weird. But you're making the laws. It's laws and cricket.
Oh,
and
we take it very seriously.
It's rules and golf.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
Are you suggesting that cricket is a more pompous game than golf?
Yeah. I would imagine you might be allowed to buy a towel in a golf shop, regardless if you're not a member or not.
I don't know. You're allowed a Royal and Ancient umbrella if you're.
Yes.
Yeah, you probably are.
Yeah, they love flogging a bit of merch.
Yeah.
This sort of pernickety, pedantic, bureaucratic infrastructure I hate in every other sphere of life apart from things like cricket. Cricket, it absolutely delights me.
Yeah, it fits. I think cricket's a wonderful game and it has its issues, but it's like, it's pretty silly when you think about it. It's an excuse to stand out in the sun for 5 days and it's a great one. It's a really great excuse to stand out in the sun for 5 days, but it
Is there any other sport in contact, ball sport, that goes on for as long as that?
Oh,
I was about to say any contact, but there's like boat races and things that are around the world that last longer. But
because golf is a 4 day sport, doesn't have to be played as one, but I guess,
tournament. Yeah.
Yeah, cricket is a 5 day one. Yeah, I can't think of. There must be some sort of like ball chasing game that goes on for ages, or like professional egg hunt.
I am thinking
about what's happened there. But no, but this is the beauty of cricket, and I don't want to toot the horn of British eccentricity too hard in case the flag with the word bang comes out the end of it. But cricket is something that I will become very proud to be English about. And it's one of the few things that I'm proud to be English about, but it's one of the finest things that we invented. And then in true English tradition, taught to the world so they could hammer us at it. Now, we clearly know what you're good at, which is being obsessed with cricket. What are you the worst at in the world?
I'm quite bad at a whole variety of things, but I was thinking about this, and the thing I'm really elite bad at is failing to go to bed. Now, anyone who has ever spent any time sleeping in a room as me, so friends, family, whatever, will know that as soon as I decide to go to sleep, like it's immediate, I'm world class at falling asleep.
I fucking hate you. Yeah. People who can do that, grind my gears.
Well, now I've really turned you against me.
Yeah,
you are
not winning today's contest.
But what I'm not good at is like the bit before that, the bit where you're like, oh, I'm really tired. I'm literally falling asleep at my laptop. One more game of Football Manager. Oh, let me just check Twitter. And then Facebook, and then Instagram, or Twitter might have changed.
Yeah.
I can be up till 4 or 5 in the morning doing nothing and then have to be up for work at like 7.
Yeah. And that's when the laws of cricket get pretty surreal. Yeah. When they've had not much sleep, it's like, when a butterfly lands on the third stump.
But yeah, I'd go so far as to say I think I could win a contest with almost anyone at successfully not going to bed.
That's a hell of a challenge.
I
think Twitter is a lot to answer for with that bar that appears at the top when new things have been added to the timeline. You don't need to, like, Facebook doesn't do, oh, more like new messages or new posts appearing on your wall, so you can close Facebook. But then Twitter goes, oh, see 3 more messages. And you go, no, I don't need to, but it's there now. And what if one of them's important?
Yeah, just one more hit.
Yeah.
Just one more hit.
More. I just need my Facebook. Just need my Twitter.
And it's fine if you have, like, if you follow people from all around the world, especially if you have, like, global sporting interests.
Yeah.
You're like, you end up caring about baseball you didn't know existed. Because people are tweeting about that, and that's what your timeline's saying. So you're like, okay, I guess I should watch that. And it can go on a long time.
Yeah, it's all particularly awful because if you're, because we're ahead of America, just like the back end of American news will come in just as it's time to go to bed. And it's like, he's done what? No, I have to go to bed. I have to go to bed and hope the world is still here in the morning.
Today's topic is, well, we've been saying the world's worst sporting rule. Ben, what's your research led you to?
So I started off by looking at some of the most famous rules in the world. To begin with, the Marquess of Queensbury's rules of boxing.
Yeah.
But I looked into what preceded them, and it was the London Prize Ring rules, which stood mostly from 1838 to 1867, and they were based on rules devised by Jack Broughton, who was an astonishing knuckle duster? No, bare knuckle fighter in the mid-18th century. Now, what the London Prize Ring rules got rid of, we said no more biting, no more scratching, no more kicking, no more hitting whilst down, no more holding the ropes, no more using resin, stones or other hard objects in your hands, and no more biting. So basically, no more fun. Being a bad dog.
Is that the second no more biting? I think you said it twice.
Yeah.
Just for double emphasis there.
Well noticed. I really hope that's in the laws as well. No, they were doing the top half of the teeth and the bottom set of teeth.
Oh, I see. biting by the fighter, no biting by spectators.
Yeah, exactly.
Important.
What, however, was still allowed in the London Prize Ring rules were spiked shoes up to 3/8 of an inch long, which were authorised by the Pugilistic Benevolent Association. After the word pugilistic, no one's expecting benevolent, are they? Just hitting them with the right cross going, this is for your best interests, mate, your best interests. They were very lax about how long a round was. In fact, there was no timekeeper. The round ended when you were knocked down. And then had 30 seconds to get up. And after that, a further 8 seconds to come to scratch. And scratch was like a line drawn in the middle of the ring. Mm. And if you couldn't do that, it was the end of the fight. But often what boxers would do, because they were having 30-round fights and were knackered, they'd get hit and then go down and get a 30-second break and come to scratch. Have a mess, get hit.
Down you go.
But there are 3 other ways in which a fight can come to an end. If there is a riot, this is in the rules, guys. If the police come along and break up the fight.
Oh, right. I'm beginning to see what sort of fights these were.
Yeah. Or best of all, in the case of, and this is in the precise wording of the rules, chicanery.
What's chicanery?
Now, chicanery, I actually looked it up. The etymology goes back to the French word, which means to quibble.
Right.
And essentially, any naughtiness and underhand doings.
I mean,
we're back on naughtiness.
I'm not entirely sure what naughtiness is left without all of those rules in place.
Yeah. It's basically if the two boxers do a 57 position, then it's all over.
No more of that.
Next, I ended up looking at Aussie rules, and there's Aussie rules, like a bit like ice hockey, it's basically a gigantic fight, and occasionally a game breaks out.
Yeah,
and it's have you ever been to an Aussie rules match?
I've never been. I've watched a lot on TV. I've been to Aussie rules stadiums. At the time, I was dating an Australian, and
who was also
fairly
pretend.
Flat out told that we couldn't go to a game on this particular holiday. We had other things like meeting her family to do, and there was no time for sporting events, which may have been why it ended. It wasn't why it ended. I love Aussie rules.
It ended for chicanery.
I love Aussie rules because it's a really, really graceful sport. The laws of the sport make total sense. You run, you pass, you kick, it can be absolutely beautiful. And I'm then sure they just invented a fight on top of it that makes all of the rest of the rules almost entirely pointless because you can just tackle someone to the ground and sit on them and like, nothing else matters.
It's a bully sport, isn't it?
It really is.
Then you combine it with the Irish Gaelic football teams play against the Australian Aussie rules teams every summer, or every winter rather.
Yeah, Gaelic football's not quite as violent, is it?
Except when it is.
That sounds like the most Irish rule I've ever heard in my life.
It's not violent until it's violent.
Yeah, my three favourite rules for them is one, that there will be a free kick awarded against a player who intentionally or carelessly kicks the football into the roof. Now, this is in Australia, one of the hottest countries in the world. Why are they having games underneath a closed roof? The Etihad Stadium, which is the only AFL-approved stadium with a roof, 38 metres from ground level. A cricket ball has got up there, but no one's ever got a football up there, which sounds like a red rag to a ball, doesn't it?
It's a challenge and a half.
Secondly, and this clearly harkens back to the amateur days, rule 8.1.4, if the umpire doesn't show up, the competing teams can nominate an umpire and play out the game. However, the controlling body, the AFL, will decide whether to accept the result or not. Which sort of sounds like they're going, oh, the ref's not turned up. Who fancies it, lads? And just someone will pop down from the pub.
But then they'll decide whether the result stands or not. I feel like they should get those the other way around and like ring the AFL first and go, is this guy all right as an umpire? Not play the whole match and then leave it to chance. Yes.
Well, I always think because they do this in football a lot. If a referee gets injured or whatever, and they had it at Spurs the other week, and they do this announcement, can anyone, is anyone
run the line?
Run the line. Yeah. And, I'm a qualified ref, so I always hope that happens again in my match. Yeah. But I think you do it at a game, and football fans are really partisan.
Yeah, of course.
So the guy isn't just going to be a referee in town to watch the refs. Yeah. Like, you're getting a diehard fan, probably a season ticket holder, to come down and be like, okay.
He's climbing over the hoarding while pulling over a t-shirt over his Spurs jersey, going, I'm a complete neutral sitting in the home end.
I'd love to have been at one of those games. I know a guy who was the youngest ever official in the Premier League because when he was 19, he got called out of the crowd was fourth official.
That's astonishing. I imagine he was sat there with the ref's uniform underneath, just ready to go. I'm here, Superman style. The most Australian of the Aussie rules. Rule 22.12, each club must ensure that players do not urinate, other than in a toilet, in or about any dressing rooms or on the ground prior to, during, or indeed immediately following the match.
Oh, God, that sounds like a stable door after the horse's bolted, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Another one that happened this season in football, a goalkeeper was sent off for having a wee during the game.
Yeah.
And then the other fun one that I love is, and this is clearly shows what a chaotic game it is, at any point, the captain of an opposing team can ask the referee to do a head count of the other team. And if there are the wrong number of players on the team, then a free kick and a penalty is awarded.
Yeah, this is, I have the same one, but you missed the key point of this.
Tell me the key point.
If they find that they've got the wrong number of players, the team shall lose all points which it has scored in the match up to that point. So, could you imagine? You call it in the last minute of the game. Just as if you're 20 points down, just call it. And if the referee finds that they've got the number that is one more than the number they're meant to have, which I should know but don't.
18? Is it 18? It feels like it should be 18.
It's loads, isn't it? Yeah. But then they're down to zero. You've got an 80-point lead suddenly.
That'd be astonishing.
That's a really badly designed rule.
They've got rolling substitutes in it, don't they? So that can happen a bit more easily than maybe in other sports. Because there's players coming on and taking their number, the other guy off. And
right, but so American sports are kind of... So NFL, you can have a penalty for having too many players on the field.
Yeah.
It's 5 yards. It's not all your points.
Yeah, well, Australia is used to having a harsh penal system and they put it into their games. Let's go to the world of football. Do you know a rumour that I think has been debunked, but a rumour about why in 1950 India were not allowed to send their football team to the World Cup?
Is it about playing barefoot?
Yeah. So, in 1948 at the Olympics, the brand new nation state of India impressed everyone in London with their skill playing either barefoot or in socks. They only lost 2-1 to France, and for a good three quarters of the match, it was 1-1. Rumour has it that FIFA said, we're not allowing you to play the World Cup without shoes, which sort of makes sense. But actually, that was not the case. The
sponsors are not happy.
No. Well, the hard thing was, basically, there was only one slot for an Asian team to go to the World Cup in 1950, which was in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And it was between Burma, Indonesia, the Philippines, and India. And Burma, Indonesia, and the Philippines all withdrew because it was too far to go and they couldn't afford tickets. Because they were probably going to have to go by ferry in 1950. The Indian team also ended up not going, but it wasn't because of the playing barefoot. There were disagreements on selection. They hadn't practiced enough, they felt. There was an issue of cost. And there was a real feeling that in 1950, the World Cup didn't hold the authority and the prestige that it does today. Mm. And from India's point of view, they were like, well, we played in the 1948 Olympics, and that was what it was all about. This weird, piffling little footballing competition in Brazil can go hang.
Which hadn't happened for 12 years as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it meant that the World Cup in Brazil in 1950, it was meant to have 16 teams, and it only had 14, which meant that in the first round stages, one group only had two teams. We probably just went, should we just pass the ball to each other for an hour and a half and then go through to the next round?
So weird.
It's so bizarre, isn't it? But my choice for the weirdest sporting rule, it's a rule that only exists in a particular competition. So we're going to go to the year 1994. We're going to the Caribbean and the qualifiers of the Caribbean Cup.
In football. Okay.
Barbados are playing Grenada.
Oh, it's a classic derby match. That's...
Yeah, it really is. It is very much the... Everton versus Liverpool of the West Indies. And there were two bizarre rules that had been put in place by CONCACAF, who are the authority in that area, on football only. Although if they were the authority in that area for crime, then makes a lot of explanations for the high murder rate there. Anyway, I digress. There were two things. A, every match had to have a result, so pandering to the American market.
Oh, what, you mean it couldn't be a draw?
Couldn't be a draw.
Okay, because they all have results.
Yes, good point. Yes, needed to have a positive or negative result for one team or another. And secondly, goals in extra time counted double.
Oh.
Now, going into this final match, all Barbados needed to do was to win by two goals. That's all that needed to happen.
Right.
Whereas from Grenada's point of view, it didn't matter if they lost by one goal.
So one goal margin for Grenada would be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. This is basically football qualification mixed with quantum theory, as far as I can understand it. If you stare too much at the result, then you won't understand it.
Hang on, let's start. So there's a neutron and an electron.
So
the other one.
they're both popcorn flavoured. So Barbados are winning 2-0. Grenada pull one back. It's 2-1. At which point, Barbados think, we want to take this into extra time. So they score an own goal, deliberately, which probably freaks the hell out of Grenada.
Because if they win 3-2 in extra time, it's actually 4-2.
Yes.
But so if they have a two-goal margin.
Yeah, but if they win 3-2 in real time, it's then it's a one-goal margin. Or indeed, if Grenada win 3-2, then they go through. So the last 7 minutes was bedlam.
Because Grenada are like, well, let's just lose 3-2 in normal time, because then we'll only have lost by the one goal and we'll go through.
Yeah, but that's a...
Bonkers.
But that's a really...
Were they defending, like, their opponent's goals?
Pretty much. The YouTube clip is breathtaking, because it's mostly just players running round and round in circles, not really sure where to go. Just in a kind of, like, any of you could be an assassin. Any of you at any moment.
So it's like playing, like, football on half a football pitch, where you have to run down to the halfway line and then turn around to attack the goal, and now you're in the opponent's half, but everyone's lost track of which half as which.
Yeah, it's sort of football mixed with head injuries mixed with the bleep test. It's imagine if you'd taken 22 coma patients and just woken them up from a coma and thrown them onto a football pitch. And that's what occurred in this match.
So is that your choice?
Yeah, obviously.
But Ben, it's so easy to comprehend.
It really is.
I'll start with cricket.
Of course.
And this isn't a cricket law that exists anymore, thankfully, but there used to be a law called lost ball. So if the ball went somewhere but was still inside the field play, hasn't gone for four, hasn't gone for six, a fielder could just shout, lost ball. I mean, I can't find it, can't get hold of it, can't reach it. they get six runs. They can't run indefinitely.
Because so, for example, if there's a tree within the grounds of the or if there's like ground a, and it's stuck up somewhere, you can't.
Yeah, or it's, there's a rabbit hole, or a rabbit hole, whatever. You know, things happen. It's cricket. It's in the countryside. It's starting in the, we're talking 18th century, 19th century. Yeah. Things happen. But there was for a time a law that said if you can see the ball, you can't call it lost. So as you suggested, the ball got stuck up a tree. The fielder shouted lost ball. The umpire said nope, I can see it. They ran 17 while a fielder climbed up the tree and got the ball.
I would have much preferred the fielder to rip out the umpire's eyes.
I think the fielder would probably have preferred that too. So that was a quite a silly one. I also, the original football, when they codified it in 1848 and 1863, at the meeting, there was discussion about hacking. We still use the word, to be deliberate kicking of the shins.
Right.
And the Blackheath Club, one of the oldest football clubs, now one of the oldest rugby clubs, their chairman left football at that point, saying that if you took hacking out of the game, he could bring over a team of Frenchmen and beat even the pluckiest Englishman within a week.
Huh.
And he went and founded rugby, or led his team towards rugby instead. So I think that's just a lovely little removal of hacking to create rugby. Was quite
bizarre.
A nice...
And that's 19th century.
Yeah.
Because I thought the shtick with football in the Victorian times was that it was, in the classic phrase, it was a gentleman's game played by ruffians, but at that time it was a gentleman's game played by gentlemen. So there was lots of things that if someone was brought down for a penalty, then the taker would miss it, because how could you suggest that one gentleman would foul another?
Well, and in goalkeepers, if there was a penalty, would never stand between the sticks. Because if your team had committed such a gross infraction as to allow a penalty, you would let them score. So yes, but it was very Victorian English. It's about moral fibre, and so passing in early football was seen as an absolute no-no. The Scots developed part of the passing game. No, it was a bit
you
like
you wouldn't think it to look at them now.
You would run and have backing up, so you would run as far as you could with the ball at your feet, and if you were tackled, one of your teammates would hope to collect it, and passing was seen as ungentlemanly. It was kind of giving the responsibility to someone else.
Passing on the burden.
Yeah. Passing on the burden and not running straight at your opponent, you know, trying to go around them, which is very French. So early football has some wondrous ones, and early cricket as well. But more current ones. So the silliest rule in sport comes from Formula E, which is, you know, electric car racing.
I have a feeling I know what this might be.
They have a thing called Fan Boost.
Oh, God, yeah, it is.
Fan Boost will be allocated to the three drivers who have received the greatest number of votes on the Formula E app and other social media. So basically, during the race, fans can vote for who gets a boost and their car goes faster. I think we can all agree that is the worst thing that could happen to any sport. What are they doing?
What I really would like is if we could somehow make that work in boxing, where you got like a power up on your right glove every time you got a mention.
Well, just take the right glove off the boxer. Yeah. So in wrestling, not the type that you're thinking of, I assume, but, you know, proper wrestling,
like Greco-Roman and the like.
You are not allowed to arrive at the mat perspiring, because that would make it harder for your opponent to grip you. Which, again, you could totally see why they do it, but that's pretty nonsensical.
That's so discriminatory against sweaty men.
Yeah, it really is.
Which leads me nicely onto the ones I am going to go for, nice. Which are various dress code rules.
Love them. I was just thinking with the wrestling thing, rather like to put off your opponent, I'd sneak into their changing room, just have a bunch of hair dryers placed around where they're getting changed.
But then presumably, if someone in the crowd doesn't really want you to fight, they could like throw their drink over you on the way to the...
Yeah, get all sticky. Easier to grip.
Unless it was water.
Anyway, it brings me... Sweaty men brings me on to chess. Now, chess has lots of dress codes, and it's a bit like Ben's rule. It's not the same for every competition. Each tournament will have its own dress code.
Yeah.
So it's been in the news not long ago, certain tournaments in certain countries, players were forced to wear hijabs. In certain places, players have been banned for showing too much cleavage.
Yeah.
All of which is awful. There are certain tournaments, I think the European Championships, where you can be disqualified for having bad body odour.
Oh, yes, there was a story recently about someone, right, wasn't there?
That's amazing. Especially in chess.
Yeah.
Like, where, I don't want to, again, discriminate against chess players, but I know some chess players, and some of them might not be the best personal groomers.
No. I mean, Garry Kasparov and Magnus Carlsen have not released any colognes, as far as I'm aware.
So I think Magnus Carlsen's got a modelling contract. Is he the one with the squished features?
He's the current, well, I don't know if he's still current, but he's the sort of the new kid on the block in terms of being the wizard chess, whatever the term is.
I don't know. I reckon some like him and Kasparov smell quite nice. Kasparov, I imagine, smells of kind of like pine forest and teak and horseradish vodka.
So I think chess has a real say, has a real claim to the worst rules.
Do you know about another very stupid chess rule that this nation's own Nigel Short put in place? So reasonably, within the past sort of 10 years, reasonably recently, he was playing against the Bulgarian Ivan Chaperinov. And Chaperinov was disqualified because he refused to shake Nigel Short's hand, either before or after. And he's like Mark Hughes before a football game. He's like, gotta have a shake of the hand. So basically, he beat Nigel Short, and Short went, well, he didn't shake my hand. And so he's disqualified. The Bulgarian appealed, and then they had to replay the game, but the board insisted that they shake hand first to make it a legitimate game.
Wow, that is... That is picky.
It is really picky. And also, Nigel Short did it with his cleavage. So, Joe.
There is a variation of chess called Chess 960. Have you seen this? So there's a version of chess called shuffle chess where you rearrange the main pieces. You just draw randomly to see where they're placed on the back lines, which is really interesting. So you can't memorize your opening gambits. Bobby Fischer developed one specifically called Chess 960, which is shuffle chess. But you maintain a bishop on each colour, so you still have to have a black bishop and a white bishop, and you can still castle as well, no matter where the king and the castle are. You can castle to your left or your right. And it's called Chess 960 because there are 960 possible variations of where the chess pieces could start.
Yeah, I think we should have Football 960 as well, where you just pick out the names of players and they have to play in the position that you put them in.
Or the English national football team.
There you go. But who wouldn't want to see us play with Harry Kane in goal?
And then did of course, do it famously for Tottenham in the Europa League.
No. But that is, I mean, it's not a rule, but it should be a rule because one of the most glorious sights in the world is outfield player in goal.
Absolutely. Love it. The jerseys never fit. Yeah.
No!
Don't understand why. There can't be that many different body shapes.
I don't know, if you're sort of like, if you've got Peter Schmeichel gets sent off and then you've got to put Brian McClair in goal, that is quite a disparity.
Anyway, I'll come back to dress codes because I've got a few dress code ones which I think are ridiculous. So my favourite one is snooker. This is from the World Professional Billiards and Snooker Association rules. Each member should comply with the relevant dress code for each tournament. Reasonable. Each member, when competing in a tournament, should ensure that as well as complying with the dress code, their dress and appearance is smart and appropriate for a professional snooker or billiards player. Shirts and trousers must be ironed.
Oh, you gotta have a crease.
Right?
If required, waistcoats and bow ties are to be worn correctly. Now, I don't know how else you can wear a waistcoat or a bow tie. What's
round your head?
But I just think
open
the idea...
like you've just cracked up with the cigars and the
branding. The idea of Ronnie O'Sullivan just turning up to a tournament and them saying, I'm sorry, Ronnie, but your trousers aren't ironed.
But
you
did
can't
have to get,
play.
He did have to get that special dispensation to wear sort of non-smart shoes at the... Was it the World Championship last year? He had bad back or something. Yeah. He said it'd be, or his sore foot. I can't remember what it was. But he wore like flat sort of Converse things.
Yeah. Snooker should learn a little bit from darts. Don't take yourself too seriously, because if you're insisting your players iron their shirts, then you're not really focusing on what's important in a sport.
You're right, but I think what they should have is like a trouser press at the side of the table that is essentially the snooker sin bin.
Oh, that'd be amazing. But yeah, my two proper contenders come from celebrations. And this is, I feel we've talked a lot quite of obscure ones, but these are both quite mainstream, and I just think they're just so bad that however mainstream they are just the worst things in sport. A Frenchman, a not particularly popular Frenchman, called Mahiadine Mekissi Benabad, was winning the European Championships steeplechase a couple of years ago.
In 2014 in Zurich, wasn't it?
It was 2014 in Zurich. Yeah.
He'd won the previous two as well, in 2010 and 2012. He was going for three gold medals in a row.
He's an impressive athlete. He also once had a fight with a mascot.
He twice had a fight with a mascot.
Anyway, he was so far ahead that he decided to celebrate. And his celebration was to rip his shirt off and put it in his mouth. Whatever floats your boat. But it's a moment of pure joy. these are the moments that you remember in sport. These are the moments where Nicholas Bentner scores at the Nou Camp. These are the moments where you deny your title, your rivals a title. These are the moments that you want to rip your shirt off. I mean, I often want to rip my shirt off, but these are the real ones.
It has to be made very clear, he still had about 100 metres to run. Right, he hadn't crossed the line at this point.
It's not that hard to run without a shirt, or even with a shirt in your hand.
Or indeed in your mouth.
Or in your mouth. And he was going to win, and he did win. He was disqualified and he had his gold medal taken away and given to someone else because rule 143.8 says that no athlete shall be allowed to take part in any competition without displaying the appropriate bib.
I have two issues with that rule. Firstly, who knew that running required 142 other rules?
Oh my God, right?
Secondly, in the spirit of Olympus, thinking how naked they will have been in ancient Greece, the fact that they're getting picky over wearing a bib seems, again, against the spirit of the thing.
It doesn't help that he's such a massive dick.
Yeah, it does. Well, I like the beginning of that rule, which is rule 143. In all events, athletes must wear clothing which is clean, designed, and worn so as not to be objectionable.
Designed clothing.
Clean.
That makes it sound like...
designed and worn, not to be objectionable.
Oh, I see, because I was imagining someone who just like stapled a pillowcase to a rug. There's been no design and thought on this. Vivian Westwood, your thoughts? Yeah, no, it's a no. I just on the mascot thing, after his 2012 win in Helsinki... in the European Championships, the same race, he shoved over the mascot for the Helsinki European Championship Games. And it was revealed later that inside the mascot outfit was a 14-year-old child.
Why did he shove the mascot over?
I don't know. They were giving him some sort of goodie bag or something and he decided to shove him. I think he had previous with pushing over a mascot in Barcelona, I think, in 2010 as well. So I don't know. Maybe it's his thing to push over mascots. He also got in a fight with another racer who tried to headbutt him in a meeting.
Right, like during the race?
Before a race.
I was going to say, headbutting whilst running is pretty difficult unless you're a chicken.
Or Paul Radcliffe. Paul
famously had a running style where her head nodded forward.
That was... If you'd have told me at the start of this recording that you two would get a jinx on the word named Paul Radcliffe. Out of this world.
But anyway, so my actual nomination, which is excessive celebration in football. And I want to take you... to Grimsby Chesterfield this weekend. Grimsby are, I think, third from bottom going into this game. Chesterfield second from bottom, but I think three games in hand. Grimsby last won a game of football of any sort on the 9th of December.
1894.
But still, we're talking like 4 months of no wins. If they lose, they're going to go down. They get an 88th minute penalty, and Danny Rose's little brother Mitch, might be big brother, steps up, keeps calm, puts it in the corner. The entire city of Grimsby, if it is indeed a city and not a town, goes nuts. Pitch invasion, going crazy. Mitch Rose pulls his shirt off, throws it round his head, goes absolutely wild, as you would, because they've just scored a goal that means they might not get relegated, and they've just won their first game for 4 months. And he gets booked. If you're writing a rule or a law against excessive celebration, you just got to... take a look. I mean, it's not hurting anyone. Mm. And it's also, it goes worse than that.
They hang on to win the game.
They did hang on to win the game. And it wasn't a second yellow card, although
I was worried he'd be sent off. And then...
But, so I was at a game 2 weeks ago where a player scored a goal and it was disallowed. Before it was disallowed, he had run over, cupping his ear to the away fans. Because it was disallowed, he was not booked for excessive celebration.
Because
it wasn't a celebration.
Also, that's not a celebration. Like, celebration is, yay, I did a thing, hands in the air, whereas that's provocation.
And provocation, I can see that you could get booked for. And it was just, Mitch Rose, if he could have done exactly the same thing, but with his shirt on, but that's not a reason to write that into it. And the reason is because they don't want sponsors to get upset, and it's silly.
I think the rule should be, you're allowed to take your shirt off, but you're not allowed to take your pants off. Although, who wouldn't want to see Harry Kane celebrating the winner in the World Cup final this year by taking his shorts off and putting them on his head?
Well, famously...
Most right-wing Russians. I looked a lot at golf, which is my my passion sport. It used to be the case that if you addressed your ball on the green, you would get, and then the wind moved the ball, you would get a penalty stroke for the wind moving your ball. Obviously, with a lot of players, that was not very popular because they have no control over the wind. So they rescinded that rule in 2012. And actually, last year, they also got rid of the rule which gave you a penalty for accidentally like moving the ball with the head of your putter before you've taken a stroke on the green.
Oh,
as
really?
Well. Off the green, not so much. It's still a penalty. But if you're on the green, because the green is so flat, and the ball can move with such ease.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of high-profile incidents that led to penalty strokes. One of them, very famously, Lexi Thompson, who was the youngest ever golfer to play in the women's US Open. She was 12 years old when she played in the women's US Open.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, she's now a well-regarded professional. And she was leading the 2017 ANA Inspiration, which is one of the LPGA's major championships. And during the third round, she had a 15-inch par putt, which is very short. And she just marked the ball and picked it up and just rotated it to sort of line up the name on the ball to the hole, so she was dead on line and replaced it and tapped it in. And the next day, with about six holes to play, she was told she had received a penalty in the previous round. So she had placed the ball where she'd marked it to the side, and when she placed it back down and by the mark, she placed it in front of the marker, so it had moved less than an inch probably from its original position on a putt she would never have missed. And then she had finished a round and signed her card. So not only was she given a two-stroke penalty for not playing the ball from the correct position, but she was then given another two-stroke penalty for having signed an incorrect scorecard. So her three-shot lead with six holes to go suddenly turned into a one-shot deficit.
Oh my God.
In one of the most high-profile competitions in women's golf.
Am I right in saying that was also one that was spotted by someone at home
and
on TV?
It was one of those that was spotted by a dick at home who rang up the competition, who rang up the LPGA to say, oh, I've watched this back on television and I don't think she's put it back in the right position.
You know that guy's a men's rights activist, don't you?
So, add insult to injury, Lexi lost in a playoff for the competition. But they have now, the major golf tours have gotten together and they say they will no longer allow viewers to get involved in decisions. There's a TV official at the events instead who will officiate and they'll be watching the TV coverage, and if they spot anything, they can raise it.
Again, I'd love to be able to do that in football. Just ring up the FA and go, yeah, I think I've spotted Robbie Savage being
being Robbie Savage
in a built-up area. Can you get him off the pitch for that, please?
Yeah. There's some other great rules in golf. I say great. Some really irritating rules in golf. If a ball lodges in an orange underneath an orange tree, you have to play it as it lies.
That's reasonable.
Yeah, and so you have to smack the orange. You have to play the orange.
Does that hold for any other fruit, citrus or otherwise?
I read a rule which said if there's a pear in a bunker, half eaten, not near a pear tree. There's the book which is the rules of golf, and then there's another book which is the decisions on the rules of golf.
Yeah, it's the Torah specific, and the Talmud.
That's what I'm writing for cricket.
There's a very specific example about this pear in a bunker, which is half eaten, not near a pear tree. And the rules very snottily point out, actually, it's a loose impediment in a hazard. You can't move it anyway because it's in a hazard as opposed to in the field of play.
What happens if you hit just a perfect low drive and it thunks into a cantaloupe?
I think you're probably stuck playing the cantaloupe.
Wow.
You're going to need a bigger club.
Yeah.
In golf, you play the ball when it's at rest. You're not meant to hit a moving ball. But there is an exception. If a ball is in a stream, it's in a hazard, and so you can play it while it's moving in the stream. You have to play it. You can't wait for it to be brought to rest in the stream because you might be waiting for its lie to be improved. So if you're going, we're just going to wait to see where it comes out at, the beach several hundred miles away.
Either that or you're just waiting for a better current.
Yeah, so you're not allowed to wait for that. There's something called the towel rule. In 1987, Craig Stadler, who was a very well-known golfer, his nickname was the Walrus. He won the Masters in 1983, I think, or 82. He was disqualified in the Andy Williams Open after he'd originally come second. He lost $37,300.
Wow, that is
for disqualification.
He dreamt the impossible dream.
Because he knelt on a towel while playing a shot from underneath the tree, which was considered to be building his stance. Because you're not allowed to sort of construct something for you to get a better lie on. Not only that, the decisions on the rules also gives the example. If a ball is next to a cactus and you want to protect yourself from the spikes of the cactus, you can wrap a towel around your legs to provide sort of extra cover, but you can't put the towel onto the cactus.
Obviously, if the cactus is not a member of the MCC, then it's not allowed to borrow a towel either.
God knows if there's an orange lodged on the spikes of the cactus with the ball lodged inside that, yeah, everyone just goes home with competition. in college basketball in America, NCAA basketball, Section 4, Class B, Article 1E, you can already tell this is going to be an annoying rule, you can't dunk a ball in the last 20 minutes of a pre-game warm-up. If you do, the other team get 2 free throws at the start of the game. And in 2014, Tennessee Tech against the University of North Florida. North Florida did some dunking within 20 minutes of the start of the game. Tennessee Tech got their 2 free throws. And yep, you guessed it, the final score was 82-80 in favour of Tennessee Tech.
Good.
What's the justification for that?
I don't know. It's a stupid law. that result proved it. I read about false starts as well. What does false start mean?
The simple definition is if you leave the blocks before the gun has been fired.
Incorrect. QI klaxon.
But the actual reason is it's if you move within something like a hundredth of a second where it seems like it can't possibly be your reactions.
If you move within 0.1 seconds after the gun going off. So obviously before the gun and up to 0.1 seconds after the gun going off, that's considered a false start.
That infuriates me because you've moved after the gun has started.
So they did a analysis at the 2008 Beijing Olympics, and in 1 out of 1,000 starts, an athlete could get out the blocks in between 0.109 and 121 milliseconds. So there was no chance of them really getting beyond the 0.1, basically. So they've set that as their established norm. They say any quicker than that and there's something wrong going on. But there was a famous false start in the 1993 Grand National, the horse race.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, where 7 people finished. Seven people. And also 7 horses.
Horses are people too.
Yeah, the winner was Esha Ness under the jockey John White. Except he wasn't. It's the race that never was. There is no official 1993 Grand National because they had a false start. Not enough people saw it and they ran the race.
Was that the one when they had like a starting wire and it didn't come up properly?
The tape didn't come up properly. Yeah. What's worse is they actually had a false start before the false start. So they tried to start the race and they false start and the starter's flag went up. And what the setup was is there's another flag another 100 yards further on. So a second guy puts the flag up if the first group don't see the first flag. So they had a false start and everyone saw it and they restart and they got into position again. And the second time round, the wire caught on Richard Dunwoody's chin, who was one of the jockeys. And for whatever reason, the second flag didn't go up and pretty much all of the field, bar 9, ran the race. Peter O'Sullivan and Jim McGrath and the BBC commentary are commentating on a race that they know is going to be a void race. If you watch the footage, every now and again they'll go, this race is surely going to be void. Back to commentating normally on the race and here we are. it's the weirdest few minutes.
I don't want to flag it up, but again, so on brand for this podcast.
Yeah.
That is the February 30th of Grand Nationals.
Absolutely barreling through. £75 million in bets had to be refunded.
Oh, God.
Starter Keith Brown, it was his last Grand National. Oh. He was meant to be retiring. He is the sidekick in a buddy cop movie who said, I'm retiring after this Grand National, and it famously is the national that never was. And he nearly made it even worse because at the end of that, the running, when S&S had apparently won, he said, right, we're going to run the race again, but we're only going to let the 9 horses who didn't run off actually run the race this time. We're going to disqualify everyone else. And understandably, a lot of trainers and owners kicked the fuck off and said, absolutely not.
But you couldn't let them run it all again because the horses would die.
No, the horses were famously dead, exactly. Apart from those 9 who hadn't run a race.
If you want stupid horse racing starts, I don't know if you're aware of the Palio, which is a horse race in Siena.
In Siena, the one in the sort of the stadium, the Colosseum.
It's the city centre, the piazza in Siena.
It's in a Bond movie.
It is in a Bond movie. Siena is divided into these contrada, these sort of family tribes. We have a whole day of crowding into the square. Then you have hours of pageantry, medieval flag waving, throwing. They practice for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then the horses run around 3 times. It takes about 90 seconds.
Yeah.
They're wild horses with professional jockeys. The horse is taken into its piazza.
I'd love to see professional horses with wild jockeys. just Grand National Horses with his Yahoo on top of it. The bloody club on top of it.
In undesigned silks.
Yeah.
They're taken into their contrada's church to be blessed before the race. Horse pees in the church, it's seen as a sign of good luck. Then they're taken out.
That is weird.
These horses are pulled out of a hat, you know, not the horses.
That's a big
they
hat.
Are allocated at random.
Be easy to pull the jockeys over.
But anyway, the order in which they start is also pulled out at random. Yeah. The horses each go in between the ropes, and when the last horse goes past the back rope, the front rope lifts up.
Yeah.
Because they're all wild horses, getting them to line up between the two ropes is an absolute nightmare. Yeah. So the last horse is seen as a massive tactical advantage because they will wait and they will wait and they'll wait till as many of the horses are not facing in the right direction as possible. And then they shoot through and they take an early lead. But of course, because of that, you have maybe 20 or 30 full starts. Sometimes it goes off first time and it's a miracle and the race is over in 90 seconds. All the while, it's in August in Siena, and the crowds, to get a good spot, you've been standing there all day. So there are people being passed out over who've passed out because, you know, the heat and the exhaustion. It is truly the most ridiculous sporting spectacle ever. Yeah. It's almost entirely corrupt. The jockeys are literally talking on the start line, offering each other. But yeah, you've never seen full starts like paleo full starts.
Yeah. I've got two more things I want to talk about. Have you heard of Kirkwall Ball?
No.
So this is a sport with essentially no rules.
Excellent.
It's played on the island of Orkney in the small town of Kirkwall, which has got a population of, I think, about 6,000. And this is off the coast of Scotland, of course. And it's annually they play two matches, one on Christmas Day and one on New Year's Day, between the Uppies and the Doonies.
I have heard
and
of this.
They play it. There's about 150 men or boys. They don't have any ladies and girls matches. 150 players per team. So that's 300 people taking part in this match. The pitch is the entire village. And they start at St. Magnus Church, or Magnus Cathedral, which is sort of halfway up the main street. And one team has to try and get the ball 500 yards that way and lob it into the pier, lob it off the pier into the water. And the other team has to get it 500 yards the other way and smack it against the wall of a house on Mackinson's Corner. But there's no limit to where you go with the ball. You can run through businesses and graveyards and church and down side alleys and sort of up and down stairwells. The ball is just lobbed into this scrum at the start of the game. They used to play it like football where you could only use your feet, and now you can also use your hands. So it's basically just a pile of bodies, like bees when they're swarming on top of prey or something, with a ball somewhere in the middle of it. And occasionally the ball would pop up and bounce that way and everyone would run 10 yards that way and then converge in it again. The pictures I've seen of it are incredible because you've sort of a mass of bodies and then someone who's clearly gone, well, it's not moving for a while, has stepped out and is just smoking a cigarette beside the scrum. And fighting isn't encouraged but often breaks out. And there are obviously lots of injuries and ambulances and medics are on hand throughout.
But presumably you're allowed to run through the ambulance.
Yeah, presumably climb in through the back and out the windscreen at the front.
Yeah, and then you grab some syringes and anyone who comes near you just inject
them. Yeah, exactly.
Take a gurney and just throw it through to clear your
path. And the winner is the first team to score. So the game could go on for literally ages. The 2016 Christmas Day match lasted a surprisingly short 14 minutes. A week later, on New Year's Day in 2017, the match lasted 3.5 hours.
Wow, do we know what the longest the game's ever lasted?
I think that's one of the longer ones, and particularly because it's that time of year and it's Orkney, so it's quite far north, so it's getting dark by about 3:30 in the afternoon.
It's freezing as well.
Yeah, exactly. So they play a boys' match in the morning and then the men's match in the afternoon. And then after the match has taken place, there's a post-match fight for the ball where basically sort of 5 or 6 of the more popular players go into a smaller scrum and the ball is thrown into the middle and the first one to manage to pick it up and hold it over their heads is the winner who gets to keep the ball and they have to host a party for everybody in their house.
Oh.
So they're because the bars won't be open till all hours, so once the pubs are closed, everyone then converges on the guy who's won the match ball's house for an after party.
I'm not sure I'd try that hard.
But I have gone to the world of football for my worst rule.
God, we all have.
We kind of have, haven't we?
Yeah.
I love this story. You might have read this article in The Guardian a couple of weeks ago about when football had no end. So during World War II, replays were considered very complex and time-consuming, and when you got the footballers at the time were often men with jobs and also serving in the army, so time was very much of the essence. So matches had to be played quick and regionally. So rather than national leagues, you had regions in like Lancashire and Yorkshire and down the south and all over the country. In 1941, they came up with a way of separating teams where if there was a draw, they would award the draw to the team who had a better league record to try and just avoid any replays. But obviously that wasn't considered very satisfactory to anybody. So they had to do away with it. And then they hit upon the idea of maybe a golden goal. The League South Cup in 1942-43 would play 20 minutes of extra time. And if there was still no separation between the teams, they would introduce a golden goal or a golden corner. So the next team to win a corner or score a goal would win the match.
That's playground rules,
I know,
isn't it?
Right? But no, proper playground rules would be next goal wins, wouldn't
it,
Ben?
Yeah.
So they introduced play to a finish in some of these leagues. The Lancashire Cup between Liverpool and Everton in 1 year, 130 minutes of football couldn't separate the teams. Liverpool were exhausted and wanted them to just toss a coin, whereas Everton were a bit fitter and wanted to carry on. So there was debate. There was debate between the managers of the team and the coaching staff at the side of the pitch as to what they should do. And then the referee said, we're just going to play 5 more minutes. And they still hadn't scored a goal, so they abandoned the game completely with no result. Cardiff City against Bristol City managed a match which lasted 3 hours and 20 minutes. And on the 30th of March 1946, Stockport County played Doncaster Rovers in the League 3 North Cup. And it was 2-2 in the first leg, and this is the second leg, and it was still 2-2 in that match. So both teams had scored 2 away goals. And so they played on and on and on. Les Cocker for Stockport County eventually scored at about the 3-hour mark, and it was disallowed for handball.
No! And then he celebrated, and they were looking for celebrating. Yeah.
And this
out.
Is all before substitutes as well.
All
so
before
you've
substitutes.
The same 11 men.
Yeah, exactly.
Existing.
So players were just, the one report I read said, players were collapsing with exhaustion, and the crowd was calling upon the referee, a Mr. Baker from Crewe, to stop the game. Just please let them finish. And eventually, after 203 minutes, so 3 minutes longer than that match between Cardiff and Bristol I mentioned, the match was abandoned for bad light. So
you abandoned a football match using a cricketing reason for abandoning it.
Yeah, it was. They eventually had to toss a coin to host which team would get to host a replay. So Dons won the toss to host the replay, and rather anticlimactically, won 4-0, including a hat trick for Ralph Madison. So after, that's what, the guts of about 400 minutes of football, they eventually could separate the teams. Not surprisingly, play to a finish was scrapped a couple of months later. So our candidates today for the World's Worst Sporting Rule are Ben's suggestion of the double the goal in extra time rule as exhibited in the 1994 Caribbean Cup, Johnny's suggestion of excessive celebration, bookings and disqualifications, and my suggestion of the play to a finish rule during the war. I mean, your difficulty in explaining what the hell was going on, the double the goal thing, makes a strong case for you, Ben.
Yeah.
The play to a finish, clearly a terrible idea, particularly for men who were meant to be fighting a war.
Yeah, I mean, like, World War One proved that attritional fighting is not a good tactic, so they adapted it to attritional football instead. Yeah.
And then, obviously, excessive celebration is one of those things that really annoys me. But then again, the European athletics guy, he was just being a dick. I kind of love play to a finish. It's so school ground. We've all been there when next goal wins and 20 minutes later your parents are pulling their hair out wanting you to come home. There's something hilarious about the thought of a crowd begging the referee to just let them stop playing.
Like, yeah, we've all been in theatrical performances where you go and make it stop. Please make it stop. But I mean,
and the decision of a referee who to disallow a goal when he spotted a handball that no one else has spotted.
Yeah, that's ballsy. I'm going to fight for mine, though, because, no, like, because that is, like, there's a purity about play to a finish that we all understand.
Yeah.
Whereas my rule led to players attacking their own goal and then not being sure whether that was the right thing to do. And basically running around like 22 headless chickens, which in a Caribbean match is one hell of a thing to say.
So I think given we've reached this stalemate, I am now going to ascend the mountain and speak to the Oracle. I'll be back in 4 days, guys.
No, 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 no. We play this podcast to the finish.
In which case, I'm going to go with play to a finish. Fine. I think the stories of those matches, just, I love them so much. Before we go, I've got to give you some of the worst news of the week. And this news comes from the Daily Mirror here in the UK. I read an article about a retired nurse called Jill Cooper who went to buy a birthday card for a friend's 2-year-old daughter. She went to Paper Chase, which is one of the popular chains here that sell greeting cards. And she picked up a lovely card with a picture of a lion holding a balloon. And the balloon has the number 2 in it, so perfect for a 2-year-old's birthday. And you could pull a little tag. The lion's tongue would flick in and out of its mouth in sort of a cute fashion. And she turned the card over and said on the back, "Unsuitable for children under 3 years." So well done for Paper Chase. Before we go, Johnny, where can people find out about you and your work?
If they want to find out more about the laws of cricket, that's lords.org. If they want to find out more about me, that's at Johnny_Singer. If they want to read about championship football, I thoroughly recommend the Football League paper where I write most weeks. If they want none of those things, I'm normally like walking around Kilburn. You can come and find me.
We're getting more and more specific. Just give me your postcode, John. Meanwhile, we're all off to rip Ben's shirt off, shove him into an orange, and play him to a finish. Thank you for listening to the Worst Foot Forward. Goodbye.
That was a hell of an episode. Thank you very much for listening. It's just Barry this week. Ben is in Brighton as I'm recording this. Thank you so much to Johnny for joining us. What an interesting man. An interesting job. We obviously always have a lot of theatre and comedy people on the show, and it was really fascinating to have somebody who has a job that obviously is a job, but you would never think of that someone has to actually sit down and codify and keep an eye on the rules of a game like cricket. So thank you so much to Johnny for doing the show, and do buy his book when it comes out, and go to a cricket match, and you can sit in the crowds and drink endlessly for hours and hours. That, as an Irish person, that seems to be what cricket is mainly about, is sitting in the sunshine, getting progressively more sunburnt and more drunk. No wonder they lost the empire. You can, as ever, find us on Twitter. I'm on at BazMaxDay, Ben is on at Ben Vandeveld, and the show, you can find it on at Worst Foot, on Facebook at Worst Foot Forward, and send an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com if you have any questions, queries, ideas. We'd love to hear any suggestions for future guests. We're trying to record a bunch of episodes in the next few weeks before Ben's baby arrives. If you have any ideas for someone who we should have on the show and you have a link to them or a connection to somebody really interesting, then please do drop us a line. We'd love that. Oh, please, as ever, give us a rating or a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to us. Click the 5-star button, write a single sentence saying how much you love and adore us, and we will let you live. And that will hopefully help us climb those iTunes charts. And, oh, big news, the website, the long-promised and heralded website, is finally nearly here. If not this week, it'll be out next week, hopefully. Ben and I kind of promise. We're doing our best. We're both really busy at the moment, but we're trying to get it finished and up and going so you can see all our episodes in one place, and stupid pictures of us, and a blog, and other bits and pieces that we'll add to it as and when. So yes, promise, that is coming really, really soon. I hope you're having a lovely bank holiday, once you've listened to this week's show, well, next week you've got another belter to look forward to. We've got the excellent newsreader and comedian Glenn Moore joining us, and so we sat down to talk, naturally enough, about the world's worst newsreaders. And boy, oh boy, was there some fun. Every week we do these like interesting, weird little niche topics, like Sporting Rule, and Newsreader is another one like that, with loads of really fun stories and moments of stupidity. and fun and frippery and frolics as you would expect from us here at Worst Foot Forward. So join us next week for plenty of bongs. Not those sort of bongs. Come on now.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.